four. And that's thebic.com. Very good morning from Churchill Downs and the morning of the Kentucky Derby draw. Yesterday, of course, we put together the field for the Kentucky Oaks on Friday, and the rest of the card came together in pretty nice fashion. Looking at the entire slate and trying to get a handle on it, actually, handicapped about a little bit more than half, I'd say. And don't know if we'll see him. I might wait till tomorrow to bring Gary Palmisano in from Churchill and let Gary talk about the wagering menu. But boy, oh boy, it is a heavy-duty roster of opportunity, including the pick fives. There's three of them. Three of them. Just looking at Friday. There's one that starts in race one. Then there's one that has got the 7th through the 11th, which would be basically from the Ali Sheba to the Oaks. Then there's one that comprises the last five races, the La Troyenne, that second level allowance, going 7/8, the turf sprint, the Oaks, and the two races that follow the Oaks. So you've got no shortage of opportunities. There are four pick fours. And basically, the Saturday card will mirror this in terms of the betting menu. Looking also, of course, at the two-day wager opportunities. We've been kind of banging the drum on the two-day, $2 pick six, all the grade ones, which I think was a really fun idea. And actually, Gary Palmisano and I were talking about that last week, and it's we'll talk about how it came to pass. And I think basically he said it was his idea, and it's a good one. So we're going to handicap that, and we'll also, of course, have Satish on Friday. I got the first request on either an email or Facebook or Twitter asking, of course Satish is going to join us. That's a tradition like no other, Satish's plays. But when you go through the Friday card, the standout, obviously, we actually tipped the hand a little talking about this yesterday with Newspaper of Record in the Edgewood. And, she's going to be the shortest price of the weekend and the most likeliest winner, obviously, of the weekend as well. And the single six that they operate here happens to start with the Edgewood. So a bit of a free square, and it runs from the 6th to the 11th to the Oaks. And we'll try to get a handle on it and come up between now and Friday morning. We'll certainly have a session we do with Ed and James. In fact, Ed and James are going to join us this morning. We're going to do something, a couple of the esoteric pieces of information, including the pace quadrants that we've done with James the last several years. And I also want to look at the average winning distance, stallion information, sires and the dam sires. And we'll do more of the pedigree stuff with Sid tomorrow. Speaking of stallion information and that side of things, Spendthrift and Rick Porter, B. Wayne Hughes and Rick Porter making a deal for Omaha Beach. And this is very typical Derby week when these horses are essentially at their most valuable. From one perspective, the farm's trying to get the best price they can, even though these horses might be at their most valuable. But then, of course, when they, the horses that run well and get black type and win a race like the Derby, they're obviously their values enhanced. So this is the time for deal making. Not surprising, you'll hear some. I suppose you'll hear some buy-in information yet between now and Friday as well. But Spendthrift making a deal, and Omaha Beach will stand at Spendthrift. And that's without looking at the the roster of Spendthrift in front of me. I'm just curious. Any other warfront, you know, relations that, and you know, generally the, you know, a couple of different schools of thought, you know, getting, you know, sons of stallions, you know, in as a lower price point option at farms. That's one approach, but adding Omaha Beach to the Spendthrift roster, and of course War of Will. We'll see what see what he, what his plans are. A lot of these, we'll get more reports on this front, I imagine, this week. Not unusual, and in fact, just thinking back to Irish War Cry when I think the morning of the draw, actually, that you know, when that deal came to pass. So, speaking of War of Will, the morning session, and there's actually some training going on right this minute. Game Winner did not go out at 7:30. He was going to come out at 9 instead. And so he's out there on the track with this set of horses training. He did not go out with the others. And Roadster and Improbable went out, but the Game Winner, the late session here. So I think some people up top watching, and unfortunately the video feed, you know, which basically runs from 7 to 8, that is over. But I doubt that there's anybody. I can't imagine that they're taping the gallop of Omaha Beach. But boy, this morning, a couple of notable gallops, I thought. And we also got our first look at Master Fencer, who came out in quite the getup. if you haven't seen the image of the Japanese import, he came out in headgear that included the ear flaps, the ear cones, and it was pink and white, and he was easy to spot. Let's put it that way. And he had an adventurous morning. He kind of jogged and got a pass around, and then he galloped a nice circuit, and then went into the paddock and got a feel for that. And he seemed to be pretty spirited and alert and happy to be here. Bellafina was out, and she was more on the reserved side and was kept at seemingly reserved. But she was, even though she's been here, she was very curious and clearly was looking around. The two horses, one on the filly side, one on the boy side, that really galloped well. Lady Apple. Lady Apple had one of those gallops where they take a horse takes about two or three jumps and then leaps in the air. And throws, not doesn't throw the head, but you know, kind of the carriage goes up in the front end, and you immediately can tell that the horse is just feeling good. And terrific, I thought, presence by Lady Apple this morning. And even though she's a, you know, a big number on the morning line, she certainly will take some play. She's not going to go off 20 to 1 post time, but she's 20 to 1 on the morning line anyway. But Lady Apple looked terrific. And of course, was on hand for the fantasy win, and it seems like she's moved forward. And War of Will again today, just every morning is good. War of Will, another horse, good feeling horse right now. It's very apparent. And Omaha Beach, I put up a picture, actually. Omaha Beach just comes out every morning and just goes about his business and just looks the picture. He, you know, that expression, looks the part. Well, he does. But do you want him as the favorite, basically? Is he going to be the seventh favorite in a row to win this race? And in fact, last night, I want to acknowledge Harvey Diamond and Another year of the fundraiser for Second Stride at Molly Malone's last night in the Highlands, and a big turnout and a lot of money raised for the aftercare organization. Another beautiful day, too, for it, an evening last year. It was absolutely glorious. Maybe they should hold the Derby on whatever day they're going to have Second Stride, the fundraiser. They should, because the weather's perfect for it. Raised a lot of money, and we had a really fun handicapping session. Megan Devine and Jenny Reese and John Engelhart and myself and Vinny, and I'm going to forget Vinny's last name, professional player and major character, to say the least. So that we had a lot of fun last night, and I want to, second year I've been involved and happy to do it, to raise money. And, you know, as part of the conversation last night, I'm going to forget, I got sidetracked here to say what I, one of the questions that bubbled to the surface, the favorite issue. And we talked about how for just an extended period, you couldn't get a favorite to win this race. And to such an extent that nobody wanted to be the favorite. I've told that story about Mike Trombetta with Sweet Northern Saint when we were doing the walkover. He said, "What price are we?" I said, "You're the favorite in the Kentucky Derby." He said, "Don't tell me that." Nobody wanted to be favorite. Now it's six straight. Go back a century, right? Wasn't it into the 1880s or 90s that some crazy run that we've had here? So how do you justify embracing the favorite? But if you like him, there's nothing that's transpired with him here that should put you off. And one of the things we said last night, people very frequently say that, don't ever get talked off your Derby horse. And some years, that's really not a necessary approach. There's some years, last year, where it just, really just felt like Justify was so much the horse to beat and would take beating. The American Pharoah to some extent as well, the same way. But with this group, and depending on how you approach the Derby, there is really next to no horses in here that you are just going to gloss over as exotic candidates. I'm not talking as win candidates. Obviously, we've talked for last several weeks since the Arkansas Derby, after we got done with the preps, that, there are, about a third of the field that seems like more likely as your winners than anybody else. However, then what do you do when you're building your try and your super tickets? Because at that point, there almost is no one that you can say can't be third or fourth in this group. It's going to be very, very tricky, and it's going to all come down to your budget. So that'll be the focus from now until Friday when we send you out. People are focusing, obviously, on the weather issues. I just had that talk a minute ago with Ed DeRosa, and my feeling is, I'll reiterate, Thursday at about 7:30, you can look at the forecast for Friday and Saturday and feel pretty certain about where it is. Right now, it's not great, but I'm not changing the handicapping approach until we are much closer. So don't worry about the weather right now. Just figure out what horses under normal conditions And then you can, you know, as we get closer, then you can figure out what to do. Speaking of some other short strokes toward the draw, 11 o'clock, we'll do basically the same thing we did yesterday. Conversation leading up to the draw, and then some instant analysis. The last few jocks came into focus, and of course, Gray Magician was tying in with Drayden Van Dyke over the weekend, but it took until yesterday, really, for Cutting Humor to get his rider, and it's Corey Lannery. So Corey picks up the last open mount in the Kentucky Derby field. So we're basically set when it comes to horse and rider. Todd really, Todd Pletcher really waited this one out. just in case something went awry with, and more or less he was, you know, waiting for Code of Honor's work on Sunday, if any, and then have him come out of the work and make sure, you know, that he was okay, because if Johnny came free, Johnny would get back to Cutting Humor. That's what that was about. There's nothing more sinister or involved. A couple of other works out of town. If you saw Mike Welsh's write-up, Maximum Security with a long, long, long gallop, and then he finished with a quick flourish. But that's what, you know, Jason Service does not want to work horses fast. He just doesn't. So I know some people were kind of watched the video and said, what is this? Well, it's basically a two-minute lick. And essentially ended up being a mile and a quarter work is what, you know, kind of a spirited gallop and then a last eighth blowout. You know, basically the way European races are run. They jog around for a mile and an eighth, and then they sprint to the wire. So Maximum Security making his way. Tax and Heichel, the New York horses, hit the track today. A chance to look at them. Tax has that coiled spring look to him. And we'll wait for the Florida visitors. Won't see them. Vekoma and the two Pletchers and Maximum Security. They'll arrive today and we'll see what Pletcher, Jason Service, and George Weaver, how, you know, probably some light jog, and then tomorrow, and then some galloping Thursday and Friday. We're going to gallop into our first conversation, bring in Scully and DeRosa back. We're going to look at some statistical kinds of things and some pace conversation early and late. We'll do the pace quadrants with James. Do a little average winning distance, too. Derby analysis ahead of the draw. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit DRF.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
You are. University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Summer on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I heard the news. There's bulls rocking tonight. Gonna hold my baby tight as I can. Tonight she'll know I'm a mighty man. I heard the news. There's bulls rocking tonight.
We're back at the races. And you know who's back at Churchill Downs, everybody? Mary Jean Wall, the award-winning, multiple award-winning journalist for the Herald Leader, has not been on the stomp, but is now reinvented herself as a photo journalist. And we're going to talk to Mary Jean this week, the author of How Kentucky Became Southern, which is one of the most fascinating historical racing-related stories that is out there, if you want to understand how this whole thing happened. So wonderful to see Mary Jean, who's 11 years away from the pages of the. Well, you've been writing a little bit in the. You're still showing up in the HL, right?
Yeah, and in Keeneland Magazine and various other.
Nice,
magazines.
Nice. Oh, look at you.
Yeah. So.
No, except the moss when you're taking nature photos, when you're laying in the moss, taking pictures of birds and bears and lions and tigers. Oh, my. Mary Jean Wall in town, which is very cool. Let me get to James Scully, who is sitting beside me. And all week I kept trying to remember when we would do the Pace Quadrant discussion, where we would break down the field by who we expected to be on the pace, near the pace, just off the pace, and well off the pace. And it turned out last year we did it on the Friday, even before the weekend. And we had, a very good track record on that front. The one horse, actually, I don't know if you remember this, the horse that kind of surprised us by being much closer to the pace than we expected was Bolt Doro, who ended up third early.
Yeah, he came back and then showed speed again in the Met Mile in his next start, right? That's where he went after the Derby. So, yeah, they were training him for speed, I guess, last spring. Everything didn't go smoothly for him, I didn't think, going in the race.
Well, we thought Promises Fulfilled would be sitting first, then Justify, Noble Indy, Flame Away, and Mendelssohn. And they were first, second, fifth, sixth, and ninth. Good Magic, a little bit more forward than we expected. Bravazo was where we thought, and Tice basically was. So Lamini actually ended up involved in the front end, the front half of the field that we thought might be even a candidate, or actually ended up at the back of the pack we thought was going to be part of the pace. To flip that around, but it's interesting because the off the pace horses last year, we had Hofburg, Free Drop Billy, Combatant, Lone Sailor, and My Boy Jack, and respectively 16th, 14th, 13th, 15th, and 19th. So the back end very much right, and some of that, of course, will end up being affected by what happens at the draw. You know, how they spill, how they're going to end up, you know, who's going to get prompted, and, you know, the horses that, you know, one thing that gets a horse, James, sometimes into the pace that you wouldn't have expected, if a couple of horses bump,
right,
and a horse right away gets his ire up, suddenly, you know, he may take off. And so you get some of that, too. And, of course, you know, with 20 lining up, you're going to get some hurly-burly.
Another one that I think that start totally affected him was Magnum Moon. We had him in that second quadrant. He had posted front-running scores in his previous – up close to the pace scores in his two previous starts. But he did not break well from his outside post and actually came over and slammed into Mendelssohn, I believe, or some, you know, maybe a couple horses, and he was just done by that point.
Well, let's get a feel for where we expect the horses to be early, and we're going to use on, near, stalk, and off, and we're going to put five horses in each of those categories, and they'll figure themselves out. And there, what's one thing that's happened watching horses, James, these first basically the last few days, the ones that have been on track and around, and then the ones that have gotten here, from whether they're coming from Keeneland or you know, more far flung, there's a couple of horses who have moved up, it seems, into people's potential pace setting roles. And there's some people, in fact, last night in our seminar we did at Molly Malone's, offered War of Will as a candidate to be on or very close to the lead.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that's the game plan. And Mark Cassie spoke about how these war fronts tend to break well from the gate. He used Omaha Beach and War of Will as an example. And to me, he's totally post-dependent upon, you know, flashing forward. I think if he's inside, it could be potentially trouble. But if he gets an outside gate, I think Tyler is going to send him and send him hard. And in both the LeCompte and the Risen Star, Steve, I thought he broke forwardly. I thought he was under, you know, Tyler could have set the pace in either one of those races, I thought. And he eased him back going into the first turn in the LeCompte, actually angled him to the outside to settle him down. And in the Risen Star, another rival came, Gunnett came flying forward, and that made it easy to sit in second.
So we'll put War of Will into the front end group.
Yes. Obviously, the two obvious ones are Vekoma and Maximum Security. Definitely their best chances, I think, are going to be in that top quadrant. And then the other one is Omaha Beach. You know, he's got plenty of speed. Obviously, they'd rather sit a little bit, but if he's drawn inside, you got to figure, you know, if he's in post three like Bodemeister, Mike Smith could be, you know, utilizing the same tactics. And the fourth is my wild card.
We got four now.
The fifth is my wild card, and it's Improbable.
Yeah, more and more, and especially the way he's been breaking off and the kind of sharpness he's showing early. It's interesting in the two works here. He seemed eager to break off, was pulling early, and then relaxed on the turn and was fine the rest of the way, and then finished strong.
Right.
Which is kind of interesting, and it hadn't occurred to me watching that until some people said, you know, the way he's pulling early, you would think that he's, you know, with the blinkers off, that he's going to want to be involved. So I won't argue that.
His splits are quicker early than late in those works. That first work here, Churchill, he went by himself. So he was very eager to go early. And that second one, he had a workmate, and he just wanted to put him away from the get-go. Had his head well
sideways. And Bolden had nothing to offer him. War of Will, Vekoma, Maximum Security, Omaha Beach, and Improbable, basically in that first speed quadrant. And if you had to make a guess, that beautiful picture that will show up Sunday in newspapers and on websites of the field, coming around the first turn with the Twin Spires in the background, who of these five is the lead horse?
I think Vekoma. I think that's going to be the game plan for Weaver and Castellano. I look at that last work. He had Spinoff and Cutting Humor worked the same day at Palm as those horses. And Castellano went and drilled Vekoma bullet work. He, I think, could have set the pace in the bluegrass if he had wanted to. I thought he allowed one horse, Some Like It Hot Brown, to come up the inside and sat like a head second, but in the Derby, I think they're going to be like our best chances to wire to wire.
And then if we wanted to put a numeric assignment on the rest of them, Vekoma first.
Maximum Security is. I mean, don't you think he's a threat, Steve?
I think with what Service has been doing, I think he could be anywhere from from second to about eighth.
Right.
And, I am not buying into this dawdling Florida Derby pace. It wasn't fast, but it also wasn't, it wasn't preposterous. And the fact that he was going faster with each subsequent eighth, it gives the impression that he's a horse that can kind of attend whatever pace goes on. Are we gonna do an opening quarter here in 46? No, we're not. So if it goes in last night, somebody asked, what's the half mile, and I said 46 and 4. I mean, as a number, just a tick under 47, let's say. I'm sorry. If you think that this horse can't sit second and do what he did in the Florida Derby with that kind of an opening half mile, you're in for a big surprise. This is a serious. I'll go back to what Baffert. We were in the winner's circle after this Santa Anita Derby. He had just run 1-2 in the Santa Anita Derby. The horse that he was talking about was Maximum Security. That's who he was. Who he said should be the favorite, and he said, probably won't be. He said, but it may be the horse to beat. It's Baffert. It just ran 1-2 in a $750,000 race with his juvenile champion, and this was the horse he was worried about.
Right. It wasn't even the same day. I mean, that was like
the week earlier. He had actually watched the race with Ben Glass, and Ben had been on with us, to really tell the whole Maximum Security story. And the dialogue that people want to make about this horse is just plain stupid. Whether it's the social media indictment of Jason Service, or whether it's the fact that basically Gary West and Ben Glass were liquidating everything associated with the horse, the stallion, the dam, and they were clearing house of the whole group. So, nobody's talking about Tax being a horse that was acquired via claim.
Right.
It's just silly. This is a dangerous, dangerous horse in here.
Yeah, I mean, and those horses were sold. I mean, New Year's Day was sold, and the dam before he came
gave
along.
The dam, but they gave them both away. They were willing to give him away.
Oh yeah, exactly. $11,000 for the dam, and she was in foal to New Year's Day. I will say this though, Baffert would love to see the West win the Derby.
Of course,
he loves them and everything. So, I bet he's. I wonder if that worked a little bit in there. But definitely there was the way – I also liked how fast he came home anyway in the stretch of the Florida Derby. And, you know, to me with service, you know, that work in a mile, I mean, he was upset that they gave him a half-mile clocking yesterday. It was like they just picked up the last half of the work, you know, and he timed him a mile and an eighth.
158.
212.
Well,
the mile and an eighth. I think he said he went a mile and an eighth because it was a slow breeze.
Well, a mile and a quarter, essentially.
I mean, 212 for the mile and an eighth is what service got it on his watch. Because a half mile was 53 and
and I know he – well,
but I don't know what to make of those words.
I just read that. I thought it was – here it is. Here it was. He said, yeah, he clocked maximum security the mile in 158 and 4. And Brian Walls had 53 and 4 for the half mile. Service said he was looking to go 157, and he thought that Eddie Rivas was being a little conservative. But the point is, he's got the horse just, you know, just basically going slowly and finishing. That's his intent with this.
You know, the last time I really saw something like that here at Churchill was in 2013 with Lucas, because he had Oxbow and he drilled him a half mile 46 and change, and then he sent We'll Take Charge out later in the day, and he breezed him like a mile in like 142 or something. And it was just like such a contrast to see one trainer with two horses, and one, you know, was a speed athletic colt, the other one was a long, like, rangy lumbering type, and just a totally different approach to the two.
No, listen, that's they're all individuals. That's what you do. So Vekoma on top, maximum security and close pursuit. Any particular order in the rest of these three?
I would go with I just have to just say, I mean, it's all dependent on the post for the Omaha Beach. Like I said, if he's inside, I definitely would put him third. I mean, you know,
they're kind of interchangeable.
Yeah,
War of Will fourth,
War of Will fourth, and
improbable fifth. All right, very good. So your first quadrant, Vekoma, Maximum Security, Omaha Beach, War of Will, and Improbable. Let's look at the pressers, the ones that will be near the lead. And you got to imagine, I mean, the way
definitely that spin-off.
Yep.
Spin-off the Pletcher horse. I don't know about the other one, but I think both by my standards – you know, never likes to race up close to the pace. You know, he's never more than in his last two wins, by my standards, has been within three lengths pretty much of the pace. I think he has some tactical speed. I almost think the same thing about Long Range Toddy, who was on the, you know, who's raced up on the lead. I think he has some tactical speed. Cutting Humor. I mean, what do you think about? He's in either the second or third.
He might. You got to figure him for
the third,
ninth to twelfth. Okay. In that, you know, literally
one horse
mid-pack.
Is Tax. Tax has good speed.
Tax absolutely.
And then also, Code of Honor. You think Code of Honor?
Code of Honor.
I mean, I think they would want to be like 7th, 8th, 9th, or 10th.
I would have to imagine that, given what we've heard from Shug since the Florida Derby, and with the concerns that this is going to be on just a, you know, a moderate or honest pace, he might want to be a little closer. And Johnny, you know, Johnny's tendency is to go forward anyway. Johnny likes to, you know, likes to.
Right.
Be involved.
Get out of the gate, then get your position. Yeah.
So I think, you know, again, I think he's a horse that could be mid-pack. I can't see him right behind the leaders.
Yeah.
But
Gray Magician.
Gray Magician, definitely. And you got to figure he's going to be somewhat fresh.
And then maybe one. And then I think one of the Baffert.
What about
horses.
Roadster?
Yeah, Roadster. Yeah, Roadster has. I mean, front-running win and that allowance win, a little bit of a different tactics in the Santa Anita Derby, but he definitely has has some tactical speed.
Well, and that's Smith. I mean, we'll see how differently, you know, how differently he's ridden here. And you know, Giroux, we think about Giroux's best performance obviously came with Gunrunner in this race, and he was
forward. Involved. He was right next to Nyquist. They were both right behind Dans and Candy. Yeah.
So we're going to use Spinoff Tax, Gray Magician, Roadster, and By My Standards.
Right.
By My Standards, I would put at the back end of that quad, honestly.
Yeah.
And let me cross some of these off. And actually, yeah, about right. All right. So now we're into that stalker, mid-pack stalker type ahead of the deepest closers. And it kind of, knowing where we are with the deep closers, frankly, that would really leave us Code of Honor.
Mm-hmm. Cutting Humor. Tacitus.
Tacitus, absolutely.
Game Winner. And
how about Long Range Toddy?
Long Range Toddy, exactly.
Or what about, where's Pluska Parfait going to be?
Pluska Parfait, I've got him in the last five, Steve.
Do you really? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I think he was the last one in there. I mean, I think four of them are pretty much givens, but I had to put...
Well, he could be at the front end of that.
Right.
So let's so PQP and Heichel.
Heichel, Country House, Win, and of course the obvious candidate to be last early, Master Fencer.
I'm going to make one suggestion with Win that while I do expect him to be on the back half, I don't think he'll be as far back as you've seen. And to me, that's one of the reasons, one of the things that was lost with the employment of Errat Ortiz, whose tendency is to come from well off. And knowing what they had thought they were getting in Win as a one run closer, that's not what he is. He's a horse that's going to click off the basic 12-2, 12-3 fractions. And
yeah, he was forward in his first two starts. It's really since he went to Stakes Company. And you're right, he was 13th after a half mile in the Bluegrass. That was probably too far back.
It absolutely was too far back. And he was too far back at Tampa. And being reunited with Pimentel, wherever Pimentel puts him is going to be more favorable than what he's been doing with what he did in the Bluegrass and in the Tampa Bay Derby for me. And what I want to see, I picked him fourth, and I just want to see him get out clean and establish position and just run his even quarters. And he'll make a move, quote unquote, when some other horses are starting to back up and starting to idle, and and he'll finish. The one thing that's happened, even in these two losses, second in the Bluegrass, third in Tampa, he was finishing. And for people that say, well, he's a closing sprinter. Well, then why was he finishing fast? Mm-hmm. It going two turns. He's more than that. And as Gary Young actually said when we discussed him, he doesn't look physically like a sprinter, and he doesn't stride like one. So,
I will mention I was on the backstretch this morning, and both Win and By My Standards had those bell bottoms on, and it looked like they were just jogging with the pony. I don't think they ever got let go. I never went around the track. Like, I know I saw By My Standards go to the gap, the chute, and like I said, Win, I just saw him come by one time with the pony, and then I saw him leaving the track. So both those horses I got a little bit of concern about, because obviously they worked 2 days ago, and the other three horses that worked were all out there galloping. And so it might be no big deal. We're still 4 days out.
Well, Well, I'll check. I'm easy enough to check on both of those. All right. So, and from the back end, we've got the front five. From the back five, we've got Master Fencer 20th.
Mm-hmm.
Country House 19th or Heichel.
Yeah, and both Country House and Heichel can't even get out of the gate, Steve. So yeah, I don't think there's any doubt with those two. They're going to have to just come. They're basically bringing a plodding running style to a 20 horse field.
Pliska Parfait, 17th,
yeah,
and win 16th. I mean, they're
right.
Kind
they're
of interchangeable,
and it might be a situation where, like you said before, might flip-flop with, like, the next quadrant. You know, you made a good pace about a good point about the pace just being so key, because I think the best example of that was 2011 when Shackelford is out there on the lead setting a real slow pace, 49 and change, and Animal Kingdom was 12th at the half-mile point, but he was only 5 1/4 lengths off the pace. So you had a huge group of, if the pace is, you know, reasonable to, you know, moderate, not fast, you have the potential for 12, 15 horses to all be bunched up going into that backstretch. If it's fast, they'll get all spread out like they do in many derbies where, there's less potential for traffic trouble, I guess.
So how does this look to you then? We've got Vekoma, Maximum Security, Omaha Beach, War of Will, and Improbable in your pace-setting quadrant, in that order. And then Grey Magician, 6th, Spinoff, 7th, Tax, 8th, Roadster, 9th, By My Standards, 10th.
Yes.
11th, Game Winner, 12th, Long Range Toddy, Tacitus, 13th, Code of Honor, 14th, Cutting Humor, 15th, and really that group of five feels like they're totally interchangeable.
Like we said, it depends on the break and the trip.
Exactly, and then the rest, the back end, I think War of Will among the last five will be the closest of the last five.
No, win.
Win. What did I say?
War of Will.
I'm sorry, too many W's. Win. Pliska Parfait, Heichel, Country House, Master Fencer.
Yes.
Your pace quadrants, everybody. There it is. And, you know, we'll see, obviously, after 11:15, 11:20, when this field is put together, what effect might happen. Who would be most adversely affected by the inside draw? When you look at this group, whose hand would be forced and put into a position they wouldn't want to?
Well, I mean, what comes to mind for me with that would be like a horse like Roadster, who, I mean, he's only raced in one stake race this year.
Good point.
Only has 4 starts, and he's real lightly raced. And, you know, he's not a big horse himself out there.
Mm.
So he looks real athletic. He looked good galloping, I thought, this morning. But I thought he was bigger just watching videos of him.
Well, when you look at this, the horses that are in that last quadrant, win, Pliska Parfait, Heichel, Country House, and Master Fencer, you want to see, or you would note that if they end up in the 19, 20,
yeah,
the 1-2.
Those are terrible.
Well, but not for horses that are for
no,
horses
no,
that
no.
are going to drop
one,
out of it.
I'm sorry, 1-2 is good for horses
that are dropping
drop
out of it.
19 or 20, and perfect example was yesterday, or maybe it was the day before, after Country House worked with Tacitus. You know, Bill Mott was talking about Country House, and they asked him, hey, where would you like to see him drawn? And he said, ideally, like around 12, the middle or something. And I always just think of looking at Lee. He drew mm-hmm. post one. He was a confirmed closer. That was the best place to be. He saved every inch of ground.
Yep.
And then I think back of Dennis Acorc at 2008 when they were still, you're picking your post.
Yep.
And 1 and 2 were open and his connections took 19. And Calvin Burrell rode him diagonally.
Right across
to the rail. And it was like,
why would you not take the 1 or 2
there?
At that point? I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
And that,
I agree.
That people just don't think of it. They're like, oh, you don't want to be inside. But you do want to be inside if you're a closer, because you're going to take back. And I mean, theoretically, you're going to take back and just, you know, and then run your race.
You know, and the horses that would not be adversely affected by the 1-2-3 are the pace setters, because they're going to be out early. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, even, you know, even a horse like Omaha Beach or Improbable, even if they ended in there down inside, it would not be necessarily awful, because as long as you get that early position, you know, then you can idle a little bit, you know, past the stands the first time, and you can let, you know, there's going to be all the carrying on out to your right, horses looking to drop in, and you know, if you're there and you want to let a couple of horses pass in front of you, and you know, let's say Vekoma, War of Will, Maximum Security, they end up in the, you know, the 8, 12, 14, you get position, and if nobody wants it, you've got the opportunity to take the you know, take control, if you want to let them, you know, go on with it, and you want to set up shop, you know, sitting third, fourth, fifth, that's at your disposal. The horses that would be hurt are actually, you know, some of the stalkers and some of the behind the speeds that don't want to get shuffled further back,
right,
than they ideally would like. And that would be horses probably like a, you know, like a roadster, tax, spinoff, so forth.
Even Game Winner, he wants to be, like, you know, he doesn't want to be way far back. You know, and that's a great point about that. It's a quarter mile run, and then they're taking a left hand turn. And there's no better example than with looking at Lucky. It was a funnel effect where it just basically, when that field went left into the first turn, they funneled him straight back. You don't always get that, though. And a good example of the counter was Carpe Diem, who was breaking from, I think he was in post two, but Johnny got him out there and he was like fifth or sixth going in the turn, and nobody came over on him and he held his place. He wasn't good enough.
But. Well, and then you had just last year where somehow Rosario had managed from what, the 19 hole, with good magic.
Yeah, good magic.
And somehow found his way down to the rail.
Jose Ortiz. I
mean. Jose Ortiz.
Yeah.
Found his way to the rail.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, you know, remarkable. I mean, it's like, how did he get there from here?
Yeah. Exactly. It doesn't always work out the way you think, where it's like going to be, you're going to be adverse. You might be able to, if the field gets spread out, you might have room to run your race. It's just like, hey, when you get bunched up in traffic, if you're getting bumped from both sides, a lot of horses get hurt going into the first turn and they just get knocked off stride and they're done.
Well, there you go. And I'll type these up and put them on Derby Trail, and then I'll take a screen cap, and like I have for the last several years, and we'll put the pace quadrants up, so you've got a working idea of what we can expect. What are your opening three quarters on a time basis, assuming there's nothing extreme that happens in the draw?
I'm not on the fast side. I'm going to say like 111 flat.
111 flat. All right, that's fine. What about the?
I'm going to say four. Let's say 23:47.
All right. Yeah, I said 46 and four last night. So yeah, that's for a mile and a quarter. That's a, you know, a moderate, honest pace.
Right.
And I'll tell you, if that's what you get, if we do get in that vicinity, your exacta is coming out of the front half of the field, probably three of your four superfecta finishers, and you'll have one horse from the, you know, from the second half of the field, possibly a second, you know, that is able to invade. But if it's 111 or slower, the second half, the back half of this field is compromised on the win end.
I agree with that. And that's why I'm not keen on Country House or Hakal's chances to hit the board. I think they'll both be too far back. And I think you're right. Tactical foot is an advantage in this year's field.
Well, and that, you know, I know I've heard Ed say this. I mean, as part of this phenomena of the six straight favorites, how much, you know, how what a premium there's been on the tactical speed horses, on horses that can make their own trip, essentially, and put themselves in a position. And that's why that's only an additional stripe for Omaha Beach, who basically has shown repeatedly, and Smith has got clearly has got tremendous confidence in, you know, asking him for, you know, whatever move he needs. And, you know, the old saying is any horse, no matter how common, will give you, you know, will give you one burst, will give you one run. A good horse will give you two, and exceptional horses will give you as many as, you know, three, or you know, right, has as many gears as is necessary.
And I think we saw that in the Arkansas Derby. I mean, he was fifth at the first call going into the turn, first turn. He circled those four rivals, entering the backstretch with a short lead, and immediately settled for Smith, and a lot of horses would have just gone on running. He came in hand. The move that I love about Omaha Beach is in both the Rebel and the Arkansas Derby. You could see it. Smith, like, asked him going into the far turn, and he opens up on the nearest challenger. So he's got that ability to then, you know, put some ground between him and the nearest runners. Then just, you know, basically sit through the rest of the turn and then ask him to run when he enters the stretch.
There you go. All right. And more of that and more conversation on that front once we have the field. James, let's take a couple of minutes here and get some reaction to yesterday, to both the Oak Straw and to some of the early work that I'm sure you've already done on Friday's card. And first glance for you at the Oaks.
First glance for the Oaks, I thought that Bellafino would be better suited drawing outside. Now, if she settles behind that speed, she's got three speed balls to her outside: Emotion of Motion, Serengeti Empress, and somebody else I forgot who, but Jaywalk. But you know, and maybe it won't make any difference. Maybe she can establish positioning and then settle, or maybe she'll be taken in hand behind him. But I am a little bit concerned by the fact that she's a confirmed early presser. I mean, I've never seen her, like, settle behind horses and stalk the pace. She likes to be in the clear without anybody in front of her. And she's been able to, in California, just, you know, it's small fields, and she's overwhelmed the competition with her talent. But the one time that she didn't have that, everybody over a barrel, was the juvenile fillies. Now, granted, she did get off the less than favorable start, but to me, she was chasing Jaywalk hard. She was in second, you know, entering the backstretch, and I didn't think she settled well for Pratt that day, and I'm a little worried about her in the early stages.
You're the second person this morning that has talked about that, and the fact that this is going to be more speed than she's had to deal with before. And while the draw is excellent on a
normal, that's where you would want to be, right?
From that stand for, but
for me, I would have, if you know, Simon Callahan, I think he might have preferred to be a 9 or 10, because then he could have let the action develop inside him. Flavor and Pratt could have, and then, you know, just established positioning. Because, you know, to me, Bellafina is the kind of horse where, you know, especially if Dunbar Road doesn't get in from the AE list, I think that's like the big, like, you know, the thing that's hanging over the Oaks is that the arguably the second best filly just on paper in my eyes is on the AE list. I mean, I don't know if Dunbar Road has enough seasoning to win a race like this on Friday, but I think she's really talented.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
So she's kind of type that would worry me, but you know, it's with Bellafina, she just like I said, she could just overwhelm them and just be too good for them. But I don't like wagering at short odds on a horse trying something new in a grade one race.
Yeah, and that's a Harvey Packism. Never been on a horse to do something for the first time. unless, of course, it's a field of first-time starters that haven't ever run before. Beyond the obvious, and of course, Dunbar Road, this is a very unusual circumstance to have the second choice, essentially,
right.
You know, waiting to draw in.
She'll be a clear second choice if she gets in.
Well, and
right, I think,
you know, right now you'd have to have something, you know, go amiss here, and actually she would not necessarily be hurt by, you know, right, being in the 14 hole.
Right, exactly. She's just going to drop over.
Up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought Restless Rider got hurt by the draw big time. I mean, she just has one race under her. I'm not too keen on that pattern coming back. And she's really hung in the stretch of her last two races, Restless Rider. The horse that I liked the draw was Champagne Anyone, because she is comfortable stalking. I love three things about her. I love the fact that she improved with blinkers and stretching back out to a route last time, and I like the way she's trained since then. I see her as a filly with a big upside moving forward at the right time for Ian Wilkes. The other filly I gave a shot to is Street Band.
Street Band has looked good. It's funny being ridden in the mornings. Whether Larry Jones was, we got very used to Larry Jones's long leg style of riding, and Street Band has looked good in the mornings. And I would also mention again, I said when I got on the air, in fact, that Lady Apple. Today, I mean, it looked like she was literally going to sprout wings
and being inside's good
so
for her.
Good. Yeah.
She likes being inside. That was a good race in the fantasy, having to squeeze through there. Could have a kind of similar trip again. I'll say this about Larry Jones. If Street Band does win the Kentucky Oaks, his whole reputation will change, because I think a lot of people, you know, will see Street Band and they'll see Larry J. Jones and they won't think, hey, this guy's won as many Kentucky Oaks as Bob Baffert, as Todd Pletcher, as anybody, you know, still training now, outside of Lucas, perhaps. But, you know, I said it earlier this week, if they had a Mount Rushmore of Kentucky Oaks trainers, he would be on it, Larry Jones. And, you know, he gets on his horses in the morning, like you said. He just excels with fillies. I mean, he's good with older fillies.
First came the year before Hard Spun, and we've said this many times. He had three fillies, including that Wildcat Betty B, and the other one who's become a dam for Susan Knoll, and he had three good ones, and that was my first introduction to Larry Jones. And
was that the Proud Spell though?
No. This is before Proud Spell.
Okay.
Proud Spell was 2006.
Okay, yeah.
Proud Spell was fabulous.
Well, now because Heart Spun was 2007.
So okay, so maybe was Proud Spell part of that group of three?
No, I think she was eight, actually. You're right. I think she was 2008.
I think the year happens to be six, and then came Hard Spun. But he had a trio of just nice fillies that were showing up in stakes. And I started having him on the show. We started reaching out, and you know, didn't know anything about him. I mean, other than he'd come out of Ellis and had really
raced at Delaware.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was the early origin story of Larry Jones. Absolutely. All right. Well, any other bomb in here? You know, I will mention one performance that I kind of keep coming back to, and even though she tanked in the Ashland, you're going to get Chocolate Kisses. If she wants to go back to the Honeybee effort, she belongs on the bottom of your exotics at a nice price.
She does, and Cassie even talked about it. He talked with Tyler Gaffleon before the Ashland. They were both watching how the track had been playing on Thursday, Friday, and the Saturday undercard, and he told Tyler, he said he did, hey, we got to stay a little closer. And he thinks it took her out of her run style. You're right. She's got that finishing kick where she's definitely worthy of being in any bottom of any trifecta or superfecta ticket, Chocolate Kisses.
We're going to talk about some other elements of the BrisNet statistic package and also get some other impressions of the feel for the card, some other stake sequence, and how you might approach so far. I mean, obviously, everybody, newspaper record is going to be a universal single on everybody's multis, but we'll see what else has.
I was surprised that there
in the pick six.
I was surprised there weren't there were that many horses entered against her.
Yeah, it's not.
I thought it was going to be three. I mean, I'm not saying it's stellar, but I was just thinking there. Gosh, I'll be lucky to round up three horses.
It's still a grade three,
it's a little bit interesting. Whereby I just thought that like Ascot was 100% in the picture.
It never was. It never was. That was misreported.
Right.
That was
because that's what
the
I've heard.
People
he's
in Ascot that they somehow that was a complete fabrication. And frankly, it really that is not you don't want to pull a stunt like that with Chad Brown. I mean, it was something that they would have looked at. They certainly injured Ascot or injured their opportunity to have her come with that
right
missive that they sent out that it was written in stone. I mean, it was preposterous what they did, and. You know, they'll consider it, but it was never a target.
And he said the owner doesn't want to go there either.
No, Seth Klarman's not. That's no. Let's take a quick break, and lots more to do. John White and Jeremy Plonk are going to join us as well. Might slip Seth in today, if possible. And, of course, the draw is going to come your way from 11 to about 11:20, give or take. And